As Greg mentioned, as you look around, there's several spots missing because approximately 25 of our men are at the men's retreat this week. I asked one of the ladies in the foyer before our services start this morning, I said, "Are you missing your husband?" And she had this great big smile on her face. "Yeah, I am." And I won't tell you who that is. Unless the price is right, you know, then anything's for sale. But it's really good that our men can get away and spend some time together. We're fortunate in this congregation to have several men who can lead singing, fill in when the preachers are gone. Of course, Elliot and Keith are at the retreat. Greg's leading singing, so John and Everett and I drew straws, and I lost. So I will be speaking to you this morning. Having gone to several of those retreats in the past, it's really a special time when the men can get together and get to know each other, spend some time focusing on particular spiritual matters. If you can survive the roaring of the snoring, you can usually make it all right, but that seems to be the biggest challenge. But they're there away from all the distractions that otherwise might interfere with their efforts. And distractions is what I want to talk to you a little bit about this morning. If I were to give a title to my lesson this morning, I would call it Dissatisfaction from the Improper Reaction to Distraction. Now, if that sounds a little complicated, we could make that a little simpler, and we could just call it Pay Attention to What You Are Doing. Because it's easy for us to become distracted. It's easy for us to become distracted whenever we're driving. And according to a recent study, in the United States every day, there are 9 people who are killed and more than 1,153 people who are injured in crashes reported to involve the distracted drivers. That means from the time that our building was unlocked this morning to the time someone locks it, one person is going to lose their life because someone got distracted when they were driving and wasn't paying attention to what they were doing. Just in the matter of time that I've been speaking to you this morning, approximately 8 people will have been injured in a car crash because someone was distracted. This seems to be a hot item in our news recently. I understand that our legislation has passed laws limiting the use of cell phones when you're driving. And last week I heard that our city employees are forbidden to use their cell phones or text any use of their cell phone while they are driving in an attempt to allow them to avoid being distracted. It's easy for us to get involved with other things. I would dare say this lady is definitely distracted. Approximately 30 years ago, I was in Tulsa. We still lived in the Cushing-Stillwater area. I came to Tulsa to see a client over on the east side on the street of Memorial. When I finished that day's business, I went back north to hit 244, got on the expressway to head home. Once I got just north of downtown, close to the Cincinnati exit, I noticed that the cars in my lane on the left ahead of me had stopped, and the cars in the right lane had slowed down drastically. So I naturally pull up and I stop, thinking that perhaps there is an accident or there's something that's causing a delay in the traffic. I had stopped no more than 5 or 6 seconds until I heard the loudest noise I had ever heard in my life. It was like surround sound way before surround sound was even invented. It was just all around me, and at an intensity that almost shook my head. Shortly after that, I heard two more similar sounds, not quite as loud, that followed the initial boom. It took 2 or 3 seconds for my mind to evaluate what's going on here. And then I realized that someone had rear-ended me and knocked me into the car in front of me and that car into the car in front of it. I also realized that I was looking straight up at the top of the car because my seat had collapsed and I was flat on my back. After taking a moment or two, I knew then that I'd been hit. I felt that all of my arms and limbs were still intact, and as I began to get up, I looked over to the right side, and behind me in my back seat was the front wheel of a truck, a 2-ton truck, who had rear-ended me. I was able to get out of the car, and the crash had made the Honda Accord that I was driving look like an accordion. It kind of shrunk it up a little bit. But I was able to get out, and after quickly offering a prayer of thanks that I was not killed, the driver of the car got out. I didn't ask him what it was, but something had definitely distracted him. It was before cell phones, so it wasn't cell phones. But something had caused his attention to be diverted. We do it all the time. It's so easy for us, unconsciously, to let something either cognitively or visually or physically distract us while we're driving or doing other things as well. Just 1 week ago Saturday, I was leaving the home to go to the office. I had an appointment that was going to meet me there. I left in what I thought was plenty of time, but as soon as I pulled out of my driveway, someone in my neighborhood was just ahead of me in a 1-ton dually truck. It must have been Grandma Moses, because the speed to which this lady was driving or person was very slow. And between my house and till we get down here to 41st Street, there's no place to pass. Double yellow lines all the way. So as I patiently waited, I finally got to 137th, whatever, and I gently passed and got in the left lane, getting prepared to turn left so I could go north on Highway 97. And I came to the stoplight right here. There was a car in front of me, and he had his left signal light on. He was going to turn north. I thought, oh boy, because there were 2 or 3 cars in both lanes on the other side going west. And I knew before he could turn north, he was going to have to wait for them to get out of his way. And about that time, fortunately, he got a green arrow so that he could turn. And I thought, great, we won't have to wait for all of those. We can go on. So he turned left, and I proceeded on through the intersection going east. And when I got about halfway in the intersection, some idiot turned right in front of me going left. I gently honked my horn, just as a reminder. Hey, pay attention to what you're doing. It was at that instant that I realized I didn't have a green light to go through. My light was red. I felt 10 times the idiot that I was because I had allowed my thoughts, my concerns, whatever, to distract me from what I was doing. Sometimes our distraction ends in tragedy. Sometimes we're fortunate and we get a freebie like I did. But distraction is so much a part of all of our lives. It even starts sometimes when we're very young. We've got to learn to cope with it. There is so much out there. But you know, the accidents, the tragedies, the misfortune that happens whenever we become distracted in whatever we're doing in life, although those things are unfortunate, they're not anywhere close to being as dangerous and as destructive as when we allow something to distract our spiritual journey through this life to get our attention and cause us to get off the path. Our Savior and the writers of our Gospels and Bible warn us about being distracted. When Jesus gives the illustration of the sower and the seeds that are sown and the result of those seeds being sown, he comes to the 18th verse of Mark 4 and he talks about those seeds that have fallen among the thorns. And he says about those, these are the ones that are among the thorns. They are those who hear the word, but the cares of the world and the delight in riches and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. What he is saying is there are things that distract these people. The cares of the world. In fact, the Greek word that is interpreted cares in our English language, the Greek word merimna, means through the idea of distraction. Christ is saying you are going to be distracted if you're not careful. And that seed that falls among the thorns can represent those whose minds are somehow wandering off somewhere else. And the cares of those worldly things interrupt their journey. And the delight in riches and the desire for other things. There's so many things out there that can waylay us and sidetrack us. James warns us in this way. He says, for if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who observes his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself and then goes away and at once forgets what he was like. Why does he forget? What happens to that image that he had in his mind when he looks in the mirror to see what's wrong and what's needing correction? He forgets because something enters his mind and he becomes distracted. He might as well have not looked in the first place because his mind is somewhere else. In Matthew the 14th chapter, verse 23, we read that Jesus seemed to have a common practice of getting away from the crowds, even getting away from his apostles, and going away to a place of solitude where he can pray. As is recorded here, he sent the multitudes away. He went up into the mountain apart to pray. And when evening was come, he was there alone. Why was Jesus by himself? Because he did not want to be distracted. And if our Savior knows that we need to guard against distraction, surely it is a warning that is applicable to us as well. So as we're traveling the highway of life, what is it that might get us off course, that would divert our attention? You could probably name 100 of them easily. The fact is, Satan is going to throw things at us to get our attention so that we no longer are paying attention to what we are doing. Some of those things are innocent things, but yet they can distract us from life, such as sports and entertainment. Whether we're talking about basketball, baseball, football, golf, whether we're talking about fishing or boating or flying or woodworking or crafts or whatever those things are, sometimes they distract us to the point that we forget what we are really doing. I'm not an avid sports fan. I enjoy sports, and my favorite team is usually the one that my grandchildren are playing on. That's usually the ones that I get most interested in. But there are those who can tell you some magnificent things about sports statistics and history and who did what and what year. And it amazes me when some golfers say, yeah, 10 years ago I was on hole number 5 up here at certain sort of golf course, and on the second stroke I was 450 feet away. I mean, he could go in detail as if he had some kind of photostatic memory that just filmed that whole thing in front of his eyes. Or who had how many home runs in what year and in what city and in what game and who they were playing. And that's okay. But it is an activity that can absorb us to the point that it distracts us from some of the more important things that we need to be doing. You can't get away from sports. Sometimes in driving to church, there is a slew of bikers going down the road because they're out enjoying themselves and their ride. You listen to the evening news, and they've got the important things supposedly that are going on, whoever got shot that morning, who was robbed, how many water breaks you had today, et cetera, et cetera. And they have the weather, and then the last 10 or 15 minutes of the show is sports. Who cares? Well, I don't, but a lot of people do. And it is so important that we simply cannot escape it. And then there's money problems, another curveball that Satan throws at us. We all have, sometime or another, money problems. Things happen that we're not expecting. We are in between employment and things are tight. We didn't expect that we were going to have to pay taxes this year when we had our taxes done, but we do. So there's a few hundred dollars that we don't know where it's going to come from. We didn't expect the washing machine to break down, and now it's got to be fixed. The car needs a new battery, or as Linda Carden, it needs new brake shoes and brake lining. That's a few hundred bucks out of the pocket. Always not enough money to go around, it seems like. And with some people, it's a bigger problem than others. And if those people who have enough money to go around, the problem is, what do I do with it? You don't get any money if you put it in the bank and draw interest. You can't invest it wisely because you never know what the stock market's going to do. And so day after day, one way or another, there are these concerns, these cares about our money situation. And then there's work. Work absorbs a big portion of our time. Ever since God told Adam, you're going to have to work by the sweat of your brow because you've messed up, we understand that that's just a given in our lives. We're going to have to work. But when it becomes 50 hours, 60 hours, 70 hours a week sometimes, it seems to distract us from the more important things in life. Maybe our work is creating extra stress because of the circumstances. Perhaps the boss has a daughter who got married, and the son-in-law, who knows nothing about the work, is placed over you as your supervisor, and you're having to endure that unpleasant situation. Or some in the work area where you are, your coworkers are concerned about losing their job for fear of downsizing, and they, in an effort to make themselves look good, are trying to make you look bad, and you got to deal with that. Work can be distracting, to say the least, and keep us from remembering what we're doing. Then there's the health issues. I cannot stand pain. I can stay focused a lot of the time, but when I am experiencing pain, I'm a big baby. I cannot go on, and some of you amaze me how with the serious illnesses that you have and the constant pain, you just keep on a-trucking. And don't let that distract you, but it would distract me. And I'm sure it distracts some of the rest of you. When we have health issues that cause a threat to our life, it's got to distract us. When we have health issues that cannot be diagnosed, and we go to this doctor, he doesn't know what's wrong. We go to that doctor, he doesn't have a clue. And we go to somewhere else, and these things worry us and are natural distraction from what's going on in our life. And some have even life-threatening issues that don't look very promising. That's got to be distracting. Then there's the family issues that often face us. My grade schooler is having problems in school, and he's flunking two or three of his classes. I don't know what to do to keep him interested and going. Or I've got a teenage daughter and she wants to date the captain of the football team, who's from a family that doesn't believe in God, let alone have Christian principles. Or I've got a son who wants to date a girl that's not the kind of girl I want for a daughter-in-law. Or my brother's wife left him with two small children, and she ran off with some truck driver with tattoos all over his body and a half a pound of metal stuck to his face. Those kinds of family issues come up. I may have parents that are going through difficult times in their aged years and need extra attention. Family issues are a part of life, and they can absorb us in our efforts to try to go through life and stay afloat. And then there could be just emotional things that Satan throws at us. We cannot ignore our emotions. When we're upset, we're upset. When we're angry, we're angry. And we can't just say, oop, I don't want to be angry anymore, and stop it. We may have anxiety about things that are about to happen or we think might happen, and we don't know what we're really going to do if they happen. Just the uncertainty of what's going on. Things that might depress us, because when we look at our situation, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. There's just no way out of what's making me feel sad. Other things that can keep us from being able to see where we're going. And when we cover up our view with all these things, we can't see where we're going. We're just out there at the mercy of whatever path we're going and can only hope that something good would happen. I don't believe any of us would take a sunscreen, put it over the windshield of our car, and then start the car and start driving. We know better than that. We're just an accident waiting to happen. And yet when our life covers up our view of where we're supposed to be going, we don't seem to be that concerned about it. Now, why not? What do we do with those distractions? What are the proper ways to react when the distraction comes along? That's what we want to try to address. I just can't see where to go. I don't know which way to move. I know it's difficult, but I think one basic concept would help us tremendously if we could just adopt it. And that is simply to remember that we are spirits, given a physical body to use while we're here on earth. Paul refers to that body as a tabernacle. We've got this earthly tabernacle, and God has taken our spirit and he's put it in that earthly tabernacle, and we go around in that tent, he calls it another place, while we're traveling through this life. I often wish it would be possible, when I stand in front of the mirror in the morning, after having shaven my face and washed and combed my hair and put on my makeup, if I could just grab a hold of a zipper and unzip this body, take it off and step out and see the spirit. Because that's who I really am. I'm not what I see. I am that spirit that's being covered up by this fleshly body. That's why it's so hard for us to remember that we're living a spiritual life housed in a fleshly body rather than having a body that houses a spirit. If we could remember that, what am I going to do about the spirit? What does it look like? What does it need? What attention does it deserve today? Until we can do that, the physical things are going to cover up our view, and we have no idea where we're going. How do we do that? How do we get rid of all of these things that are distracting us? Well, it would be really neat if we could just snap our fingers and they're gone. But it doesn't come that easy. Our life is obstructed. It's just covered up. Hebrews 12:1 says, "Let us run with patience the race that is set before us." He sets this spiritual being in the setting of a race. Our spirits are racing. But he says, "Look unto Jesus." We run this race while we're looking unto Jesus, who is the author and the perfecter of our faith. And the key here is, where are we looking? We are looking unto Jesus. And interestingly enough, the Greek word for our English word looking means to consider attentively. In other words, giving it your attention. We're not just glancing at him once in a while, but we're paying strict attention to what influence and direction and instruction he is giving us. If we can do that, then we can refocus on what's going on, and all of these distractions that are out there can go away. Not all at once, but one by one, they can vanish. For example, trying to remember, I'm a spirit, and I'm going to focus on Jesus. I'm looking to him for direction. Now, what perspective do I have of sports? Nothing wrong about sports and all these entertaining things if they are viewed and handled with the right perspective. You can see that sports, in many cases, brings out the worst in people rather than the best in people. Ever been at a baseball game and the ump made what someone thought was a really bad call and he let the ump know that? I want to ask Barry if he's ever seen any umpire ever turn around, take off his mask and say, "Thank you for pointing that out to me. I didn't know that. Next time I'll get it right." I don't think it happened. What are we doing? Pay attention to what we're doing. "Well, I'm just trying to get the game to be fair." Is that what we're doing? That's not what our focus is. Our focus is we are here on the earth to be an ambassador for our Creator and to show what Christ is like through our lives. That's what we're doing. It's not our job to see that the game is conducted fairly. All of those friends we have that we like to share sports with, is there any opportunity there for us to glorify God? To create a relationship with them where they can see Christ living in us and we can have an influence on them to redirect their lives and to one that is more Christ. There's all kinds of opportunities that can be acquired through our association with our activities that can be used to glorify God rather than to distract us and get us off the path if we're looking to Jesus. What about our money problems? Those things that just burden us down day after day. What did Jesus say about having enough to take care of our food and clothing? He said, "If you will seek the kingdom first, all of these things will be added to you. I'll give it to you. I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it." Sometimes our desire for other things, as Jesus says, has created our money problems. And if we look to Jesus and keep him in our mind as we analyze our money problems, we might realize, you know what? If I didn't waste so much money, I wouldn't have a money problem. Several years ago, one of our members here was having some difficulty financially, and I sat down with them to try to talk with them about giving some ideas. They were spending $375 a month on cell phones. "What are you doing?" "Well, we got to have our cell phones so we can talk to each other." Really? What's important? Is it more important to have cell phones or pay the electric bill? or the car payment. Many of our problems are problems because we've become distracted to the point that we can't think straight. When Jesus says, be good stewards of what you have and just seek the kingdom first, I'll take care of those important matters, that changes the perspective. And this distraction can bring us to trust more in what Christ has told us. The health issues. Oh, this is a toughie. You know, the only good thing that can sometimes come out of serious health issues is I've got no choice. I have got to trust in God because no one else on this earth seems to know what to do about my health issue. With the right perspective, even that distraction can help us focus on what's really important in our life rather than being a distraction. And those problems that I've got at work, what would Jesus do in handling those situations? Those of you who are doing your daily Bible reading just recently read about Joseph and what was going on in his workplace and how instead of being rewarded for being faithful, you know, he ended up in prison. But even there in those conditions, he was a good prisoner. He was faithful to those in charge of him. And ultimately, he was greatly rewarded for that. Those issues that we're having in work can either depress us, it can aggravate us, it can cause us to be angry and to react in an unchristian-like way, or it can again cause us to say, I'm going to trust in the Lord. I'm going to do the right thing, and whatever happens will be the right thing because God is going to take care of that. And our family issues. If we can just remember, you know, we are spirits. We have souls. I don't know if any of you know Ron Babbitt. Some of you I know do. Ron used to be the preacher when we lived at Cushing. He was there 5 years. And we got to know him and his family quite well and respect him for his devotion and his sincerity and his unyielding willingness just to let God direct his life. If you call Ron's cell phone and he's not there, he says, I'm not here right now. Leave a message. And then he ends with this. Think souls. Think souls. That's his message. And that's what we need to do. Think souls. When we see a young child, oh, how cute that baby. Yes, it is a cute baby, but that is a soul. When we see an elderly person in a wheelchair, how tragic and how unfortunate, but that isn't just a physical body with physical problems limiting its mobility. It's a soul. If we keep that in mind, it will help us to remember perhaps how to deal with our family. These children are aggravating at times, yes, but they're souls. Our relatives drive us crazy sometimes, but they are souls. And when put in the right perspective, it can cause us to handle those situations the way God's will dictates, and that distraction become an opportunity for us serving the Lord. Emotions, they're real. They may not be justified, but they're real. And they can cause us all kinds of mental anguish and distraction. But the Lord says, I will never forsake you. I will never leave you. My peace be unto you. Those things can even remove our emotions if we'll just let God do it and focus on the one who should be directing our lives. When all of those go away, then we can clearly see Jesus and we can make our journey spiritual without being endangered by all the things that Satan throws at us. So, remember, I'm a spirit. I'm a spirit. Don't ever forget that. And whenever you keep that in the forefront of your mind, things that otherwise would distract you can be dismissed quickly because that's not the important thing. The important thing is my destination for my soul and my spirit. Distractions are real. And we know that Satan is going to use them every time he has a chance because they are effective. He doesn't have to convince us here, do this evil thing. All he's got to do is just distract us and we're off the course and he's won in a different way. Keep focused, looking into the author and the finisher of our faith, and we will get there. If you need any assistance this morning to redirect your lives, we'd encourage you to come as we stand together and sing.
Repent to Jesus the cleansing power. Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you fully trusting in His grace to salve? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood, in the soul cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are your garments spotless? Are they white as snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Lay aside the garments that are stained with sin and be washed in the blood of the Lamb. There's a fountain flowing for the soul unclean. Oh, be washed in the blood of the Lamb.